Okay, so I don't want to spend a lot of time with the third domain of equanimity I've spoken about, which is around Vedana, the feeling tone of experience. Simply to notice how much attention the Buddha gave to the contemplation of Vedana as being one of the primary building blocks in our world shaping. And Vedana, you know, often translated as feeling, which makes it a little complicated because then we think of emotion. Whereas actually Vedana is in itself this very bare, primary, either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant impression or taste within every single sensory experience, which of course is quite ethically quite neutral. This has always been so for us. There are sounds that have a pleasant taste. There are tastes that have an unpleasant Vedana tone. What the difficulty is, of course, is the immediate association of those feeling tones with underlying tendencies of aversion, craving, or delusion. And this is where the world building begins to happen. It is also noticing that Vedana is actually quite subjective. The feeling tone of experience is actually quite subjective, although we believe it to be objective. You know, that what we delight, what we find pleasant in one moment, we might find unpleasant in another. You know, if I ring the bell and you're sitting with horrible agitation, it's a very pleasant sound. If you are on the precipice of nirvana, there might be an unpleasant sound. Okay, so it's just noticing. It helps us to question the solidity of our constructs when we go through life saying, this is wonderful, this is terrible, this is ugly, this is beautiful, to recognize that this is world building built upon the tendencies that are associated with Vedana tones in the moment. Okay? So equanimity is not about trying to somehow make life homogeneous. You know, it's not about trying to take the pleasant out or the unpleasant out, but it is actually about severing the connection between the Vedana tones of experience and those underlying tendencies, so that it is making craving and aversion and delusion inoperative. You know, this is the work of both sati, mindfulness, and it's the work of equanimity. But I want to spend a little bit more time with this phrase, the signless deliverance of the mind. There's a sutta. It says, "Hear, friends, while I was alone in seclusion, a reflection arose." And it said, "The signless deliverance of mind. What now is this? Then, friends, it occurred to me, by non-attending to all signs, a bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, enters and dwells in the signless deliverance of the mind. This is called the deliverance of the heart." Anyway, that's enough said. We can just leave it there, if you like. Sure, now it's fully explained and fully clear. Okay, so the Buddha uses equanimity interchangeably with nibbana, describing the fully awakened heart, the signless deliverance of the mind, the end of suffering. Now, this sutta, I would really encourage you, if you can, be awake enough to listen to this very closely. It's from the Udanas, which is a less known collection of discourses. But the sutta is called In Praise of Equanimity. Okay. "For one who clings, motion exists. But for one who does not cling, there is no motion. When no motion is, there is stillness. Where stillness is, there is no craving. Where no craving is, there is neither coming or going. Where no coming or going is, there is no arising and passing away. There is neither this world, nor a world beyond, nor a state between. This verily is the end of suffering. I wish I had a pair of glasses I could look over the top of. Is that clearer? Yeah. And maybe I'll give a little bit of commentary as I read it again. For one who clings, motion exists. Agitation exists. The need to get rid of, the need to become, you know, the need to fix. For one who clings, motion exists. But for one who does not cling, there is no motion. Where no motion is, there is stillness. Not moving towards, not moving away from. Where stillness is, there is no craving. Where no craving is, there is neither coming nor going. Where no coming or going is, there is no arising and passing away of worlds of experience. Okay, there is no arising and passing away of worlds of experience. There is neither this world, nor world beyond, nor a state between. This verily is the end of suffering. Okay. So, there's a quote by a German philosopher. He says, "I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis is escalated or de-escalated and a person humanized or dehumanized." So, what is being pointed out here is that we are the architects of experience. And when the Buddha speaks about the world, he is always speaking about the world of experience. Okay? Not any phenomenal objective world, but the world of experience. We are the architects of our world of experience with our perceptions and thoughts. We construct our world of the moment, and we inhabit those constructions and react from their foundations. Is this clear to us? We inhabit the worlds that we have constructed, and we react from their foundations. So moment to moment, our sense doors are interfacing with the world of sensory impressions, both inwardly and outwardly. Sights, sounds, sensations, touch, thoughts register in consciousness and we perceive them. We have a name for them. This is the sign. The Pali is nimitta. We have a name for what is, like this is what perception is doing. We name experience. Tree, flower, clock, sky, cloud, you, me. So we are having a name that is placed upon experience. This is the sign, the nimitta. Now, the name that is designated sums up the reality of that contact. I say tree, I don't see tree anymore. I don't have to see tree anymore. I know tree. I see microphone. I see something static, reified. I don't need to know anymore. I have a name for it, the sign that is placed upon it. I can do this for you. I can do this for myself. Just as our name tends to be the standard bearer for all that we believe ourselves to be. If we were sitting and I suddenly call out, Annie, you know, Judy is not going to wake up. But Annie knows who they are, has a description for themselves, has a construction for themselves. Wittgenstein once said that words deliver us a picture, and the picture holds us captive. Words deliver us a picture, and the picture holds us captive. In the sense that now we know, we are entranced with our knowing, we don't need to know anymore, and we have actually posited a self along with that name. We have posited an independent self-existence along with that name. Microphone. It's a microphone. So outside of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's a microphone. So we are positing an independent self-existence along with the name. Now, perception, much of the Dharma has to do with cleaning up the field of perception, as I mentioned yesterday. Sanya. Because this is the big part of world building, happens through perception. Now, there are two aspects of perception that are purely ethically neutral. You know, we have a certain memory as part of perception. This is a good thing, you know, because I know to sit on a chair and not to try and sit on the microphone, okay? So this is a use, simply a functional part of deception. Discernment is a part of perception. It's just navigation perception. I can see where, you know, a road leads somewhere. You know, and a car has a car key has a purpose, you know. So discernment and memory both are navigational parts of perception that are not dukkha-tinged, you know, they're quite ethically neutral. They are necessary for moving through this world. But what we actually see is that perception is not innocent. So perception comes to the party with a group. And the family of perception is, of course, past experience. It is how we have perceived something before. So in placing the sign upon something, we are opening the door, which is very often very unconscious, that designates that name to mean something to me. So it opens the door to past experience, and it opens the door to emotional memory. It is why if somebody offends me on a retreat, you know, they're the one who always came in late, you know, and I see them 5 years down the road, I see the person who always comes in late, and I also see my reaction to them always coming in late. So my emotional memory is coming along with the recall that is triggered by the name, by the sign. Is that fairly obvious to you? Because this is happening throughout our day, isn't it? You know, I like some things, I don't like others. How do I know? Because I've liked them before, or I've disliked them before. You know, I'll talk to you, but I won't talk to you. Why? Because I've seen, you know, I haven't talked to you before, and I have talked to you before, and I enjoyed it, or I have talked to you before, and I didn't enjoy it. So the sign is triggering this chain of association. Past experience, past emotional experience. What the sound of the bird reminds us of. The memories of how we felt that sensation before. You sit and you've just come through a bad illness, you know, and you sit And there's a hypervigilance to sensation in your body. Oh, it means this, I'm getting ill again. So it is recalling what sign-making is doing. It is recalling the past into the present. And in that, if there's an absence of sati about that, then that past becomes the present. Which is why we find ourselves caught in habitual reactions of liking and disliking, wanting and not wanting, fearing and needing, without any questioning going on. So perception and memory and emotional memory are interwoven. Or we can say the sign and memory and emotional memory are interwoven. Which is no surprise to us then, is it, that we keep walking in circles. That we see this kind of circularity of many of our emotional experiences, that we're walking around the same circle again and again and again. And that we feel imprisoned by that circularity of experience. It is called patterning. Perception or sign making is actually patterning our experience of the moment in a particular way because it is being laden with association. This is called sign making. It means that we rarely see anything anew because we're seeing through the lens of the sign, which includes the lens of the associations. So we very rarely see anything freshly. So perception is feeding on past association, which in turn feeds upon past experience, interpretation, and reaction. And this is how we make our personal world. This is how we make our personal world. It's why, you know, your world of the moment can look very different than my world of the moment. Your world of the moment can look very different than your neighbor's world of the moment. Because we are shaping our personal world through perception, sign-making, feeding on association, feeding on past experience, interpretation, and reaction. So we live in the world of our likes and our dislikes and our assumptions and our views. I only need to hear the sound of the door opening. I don't even need to see. And I feel the aversion arising. There's that latecomer again. I'm almost primed to see the world in a particular way because the sign making has made such an impression. I see a person with the same eyes as my father and I'm cast back into childhood anxieties. Perception is sign making. I am, you are, this is, and it is feeding and activating and revitalizing underlying tendencies of craving and aversion and delusion. Now, the signs are a measurement of something, aren't they? They're imbued with craving and aversion and delusion. So the sign turns phenomena into a thing, into a self. Because the sign is imbued with craving and aversion and delusion that is drawing upon past experience, past association, memory, that is then drawn forth and placed in the present. So we live in a world of signs, of measuring. Measuring is also limiting. Okay? Measuring is the way that we limit things. We limit people. We limit what something can be, an unfolding, changing, somewhat mysterious phenomena. It becomes limited because it has been made into an independent self through our signs and through the associated liking, disliking, memory association process. Is that perfectly clear? This is a definition of samsara. Sorry, it's not samsara. It's sangsara. It's sangsara. It's not samsara, by the way. Sam doesn't exist in samsara. It's sangsara. This is called walking in circles. Walking in circles, you know, and this is actually a translation of samsara, is walking in circles, repeating. It's a little bit like Groundhog Day, except the learning doesn't get spit out at the end, you know. We just keep walking in circles. Now this is happening so, just a sec, please. It's happening just so quickly in consciousness that we hardly even notice it's there, that we're moving through a world made by signs, made into something that is reified, that is solid, that is unquestioned, and that is measured and limited by those signs. We do this to ourselves. Sorry. Train station. Yeah. It is a way of actually, you know, you start to question your sign making, but how much, what does it take for us to question that? You know, and even on, you know, a non-emotional charge level, how much our very measurements are limiting our capacity to see anew and to actually to see this unfolding, fluid, unfixed world of experience. And actually what we start to see is that the only thing that keeps anything fixed in place is our view of it. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? That the only thing that keeps anything fixed in place is our view of it. But what we also need to appreciate is that by fixing anything in place through a view, through a sign, is also fixing in place our almost preconditioned reactions of liking and disliking, of craving and aversion. So it's a package deal. It's a package deal. And it's so subtle, and it's not just about the big emotional charges. It's, can I walk outside and actually not have the world freeze-framed and chopped up by my sign-making that says tree, flower, cloud, and actually see this remarkable unfolding process, matrix of conditions constantly changing and being seen anew. And this is what meditation practice does for us. This is what meditation practice does for us. It starts to move beneath the signs. Mindfulness starts to move underneath the signs, where no thing has an independent self-existent existence created through the sign or the perception, or the way that perceptions be used to create a sign and to create a fixed reality and view. Perfectly evident, isn't it? There is a cognitive chain that goes on here. That's really quite a very simple formula of world building, but it's one that can be traced. That what we contact, we feel. What we feel, we perceive. What we perceive, we think about. What we think about, we proliferate about. What we proliferate about becomes the shape of our mind. So contact is the simple meeting of the sense door with the sensory object. There's a sight before the sign. There's feeling tones attached to that sight. There's no problem here. We perceive. Sometimes this is quite simply navigational, and sometimes it is not. That it's bringing forth into that moment the sign-making that is actually designating what something is and what it means to me. So as we posit an independent self-existence in phenomena, We are at the same moment positing an independent self-existence here. We're creating a self here, and we're creating a self there. And then we have open ground. It's open territory for craving, aversion, liking, disliking, conflict, tension, and walking in circles. Navigational perception. Take away the navigational perception, which has no linkage to this positing of you. Okay, so we've got navigational perception and discernment perception, which are quite ethically neutral, which are very necessary for us to be functional human beings. Yeah? The dimension of perception or sign making that we're talking about is actually the perception that is used to designate something with its personal meaning to my emotional world, my views, that is creating a self, that is creating, opening the door to how that has been experienced before, and so now how it is re-experienced in exactly the same way again. That is what happens without sati. That is what happens without mindfulness. Now, look what happens when you insert, and so there equanimity disappears. Equanimity is gone. The moment that we're actually re-experiencing, locked within the views of how you are, how I am, what that is, what it means to me, equanimity is gone. So what mindfulness is doing is where mindfulness enters the scene, because contact is quite neutral. We're mindful at the place of the meeting of the sense door and the sensory object. We're mindful that there are feeling tones, although we question the objectivity of those feeling tones. Then we are mindful at that place where perception begins to arise. It's like I said yesterday, if the doors of perception were cleansed, the world would appear as it is, infinite. What is being cleansed? The world of association and associated memory and repetition of associated memory into the present that keeps us walking in circles and keeps everything fixed in place, reified. So when the Buddha... Let's see if I can... Sorry, I have another bit of paper here. So the sign that is placed upon the phenomena comes to represent the entirety of that phenomena, the rigidity of that phenomena, and then we don't have to pay attention anymore, do we? Because we know it. There's nothing more to learn from it. There's nothing more for it to reveal, to be revealed to us. We know it because we have a sign for it. We have a glass. The sign becomes a view. And all of these realities that are created from the view are separate and disconnected from one another. The sign also creates a sense of solidity. By the way, I'm not reading somebody else's work here. This is actually mine. It's just a little bit more I've got to get through. So what is the Buddha talking about here? We introduce sati at this place of perception. It is so critical because this is a place of world building. The signless deliverance of heart is the freedom from the constructing process that fixes the world in place and makes it finite. It makes it finite. If I have a world, you know, if I have the tree is finite. It is solid, it is reified. It is actually no longer seen by me. That feels fairly neutral. What if I do that to you? What if I do that to you? And I do that to my friends and to my enemies, and I fix you in place with a sign that is dependent on how I have experienced you in the past. I make you very finite, don't I? You have no room to change. You have no room to unfold. You have no room to be the fluid, dynamic, rather mysterious person that you are. You know, what if I do that to myself? Through the I am. Through the I am. I make myself very finite. It is like a life sentence. I am. Constructed through that moment. Now we can perceive, we can navigate our way through life, but perceptions are empty of self. This is the signlessness, that perceptions are empty of self. Severing the link between perception and the underlying tendencies of greed, hatred, and delusion, blowing out the fires. And I think that liberating the world and liberating other people from our perceptions and our definitions of them is probably the greatest gift of compassion we could ever offer to another. Liberating all things from fixed perceptions allows us to see all things anew. The I am is a sign that fixes me in place. The you are is a sign that fixes you in place. It is a reification. Liberating all things from signs is what allows us to see anew. It's what allows us to respond with metta, with compassion, to be gladdened, to find joy, and to know an unshakable equanimity. So this signlessness is what actually liberates us to be a fluid, changing, unfolding being, and so all things. To not define or fix with signs is the equanimity without signs. It creates no self and no other. That was really a short version of the signless deliverance of mind. That was about as best as I can do on this. Does it make sense to you? Does it make sense? This sense of world building and how we move from fluidity into solidity. How we move from process into thing. How we move from an unfolding moment into a fixed view through sign making. And how through the liberating the mind from the tendency to make signs and to reify through signs is actually also liberating those underlying tendencies of greed, hatred, and delusion, because they are involved in solidifying and reifying and making into a thing, into something that is solid and static rather than process. And the Buddha's constantly pointing towards this kind of blowing out the fires and really having the willingness to leave no view unquestioned. Even though it's easier to get through life with views, you know, because we don't have to make any effort. We don't have to see anew. We don't have to question. And if we were to see anew, we might possibly have to respond anew also, wouldn't we? So it almost feels easier to go through life not with sign making rather than with questioning signs. And yet, of course, that is settling for finiteness. You know, because we are not going to make other things finite, other people finite, without equally making ourselves finite through sign making. So to aim for the signless deliverance of the mind, which is equanimity. Because in the absence, in the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion, there is equanimity. That's very much the natural resting place of the heart. Yes?
I'm also thinking that if, in a way, that's
It's much more than that.
But it is doing that because in fact, the signs themselves are not fixed. They're also part of what doesn't change. I mean, what does change?
Well, unfortunately, if they're unquestioned, they don't.
Can you repeat that?
The question is, you know, are the signs also... The signs also change, but if we're fortunate, they do. But actually, we can go through our life just constantly adding to our collection of signs that are unquestioned. And the signs only change if they are questioned. Mm-hmm. The nimittas only change if they are questioned. It's probably the biggest way that we engage in the argument with the unarguables.
Yeah. And is that purely biological threat of impermanence, like just lizard brain, like biological?
Well, it used to be lizard brain. We now supposedly have higher brain.
Right.
So we can't default to that anymore, actually. Only through certain eyes. Only through certain eyes, you know. Through the eyes of delusion, through the eyes of fear, through the eyes of selfing, impermanence feels very threatening. Through the eyes of clarity and equanimity, the understanding of impermanence is incredibly liberating. Incredibly liberating. So I think only through certain eyes. And of course, it's not either one or the other either, because sometimes, even through the eyes of avidya, delusion, we can still at times be really happy about impermanence. You know, we're not always threatened by it. The end of a root canal is a moment of great celebration. We're so happy about it. So it's only through the eyes of craving and aversion that impermanence is flavored into something personal to me. Otherwise, it is simply process. That is incredibly liberating. Because it also liberates any idea of fixity or rigidity or the tendency to try and form views. Sorry, yes. 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 Because, you know, language is involved here, isn't it? Language informs experience so that even the signs that we inherited as children, does, you know, meditation really help us to kind of begin to untangle and make them more transparent? Because, yes, well, it is part of our upbringing is that we inherit the signs of the world of another. Dogs are dangerous. You know, people are something to be scared of. You know, don't go out at night. You know, of course you should like marshmallows. You know, I mean, we inherit the worlds of our parents' signs. You know, and then we construct our own on top and we pass them on to next generation. You know, or sometimes we're passing on the same ones, which is actually really samsaric existence, you know, and generational sign making. But yes, of course, you know, and it is, you know, there is nothing, just because something is inherited doesn't make it a life sentence. I mean, we see this as true, you know, and so this is really about, you know, the thing is that what we have inherited, we have incorporated. It's no longer somebody else's, it's our own. You know, so it's not like we have this long list of generational inheritances to undo because it's been internalized. It's our own sign making. So actually, you know, it is not about doing an archaeological dig, you know, or where did that one come from, or where did that one come from. It is actually clearly a present moment recollection of how our world of the moment is being shaped. And how our world of the moment is being shaped by the the sign making and all of its associated package.
How do you mean sign making?
I think I can't repeat it. It's been too long an explanation. Sign making is happening through perception. Yeah. Yes. Well, the perspective of liberation and healing actually itself, I think, in Buddhist psychology is, you know, perhaps not unique to Buddhist psychology, but it is very specifically emphasized, you know, that the past arises in the present. You know, the past arises in the present with its associated emotional tone. You know, that is actually, if we meet that associated emotional tone with a different response rather than repeating it, it is liberating that moment. And we learn to liberate that moment.
Yes. So if equanimity, when there's contact and feeling and then equanimity can see it, not to make a sign, do perceptions and thoughts and deliberations continue?
Perception will continue. Perception is necessary for us to continue, but not loaded perception, not the perception of sign-making. If there's not the perception which is sign-making, there is no ground for proliferation, dwelling, shaping, and world-making. No, it ends. It ends. And that is what allows the fluidity and the unfoldment and the dynamic, you know, unfoldment, rather than the flatness that comes through freeze framing life through sign making. The I know you.
I feel a little struggle. I guess a strategy that I have with things I dislike, for example, I don't like hospitals, so I think of ways to mitigate that dislike through strategies to bring some ease to a difficult experience, but that does require a lot of anticipating what it's going to be like, so that then I can then think, what can I do to bring some ease to my anticipated discomfort?
And it's very understandable. You know, most people don't have pleasant experiences in hospitals. Many people have very painful, very difficult experiences in hospitals. And so, understandably, the idea of going to a hospital is actually, you know, that is the sign that then opens that door to, you know, the fears and the memories. And then how am I going to respond to that? Now, a certain amount of that strategizing is probably quite skillful. You know, I make sure, for example, I might make sure I have an advocate, or, you know, I have what actually brings gladness into a room that feels quite depressing, you know. So some of that is quite skillful. But of course, we also need to be mindful of where the strategy is almost anticipating a repeat of the unpleasant experience, whereas actually it may not be so. Okay, so that, I mean, there's just that little delicate distinction, you know. Are we anticipating what's going to be helpful to support balance and equanimity, or we are anticipating how to strategize because we're already convinced that it's going to be unpleasant and a repetition of difficulty. Yeah. Okay, I think this is a good... Sorry, was there...
I have one question.
Please, no, it's fine. It is. I mean, when I came to the end was a very small subsection of dependent arising, because it's a section of dependent arising which is very present moment experience, you know. I mean, another time perhaps we'll do dependent arising in its fullness, which is always fun. The third one is the sign-making. perception, where perception is actually... Yeah, this is sign-making perception, okay? This is a perception that's the package deal. Of I've seen you before, this is how I respond to you, this is who you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the sign making of
we wouldn't even call this sign making. We wouldn't even call that level of perception sign making.
Okay, so when you recognize someone as a person, you name them as...
That's quite neutral. If that naming is actually coming as the package deal of a vidya with its emotional tones and its repetition and fixing that person, using that name to represent a total reality of that person, that's sign making. Well, you're already starting a process there, aren't you? You're actually starting a process of interrupting another process. You know. Okay, so if she starts to notice the kind of sign making starting to happen, and brings that willingness to befriend it, then question of is there something you can ask for in that moment that helps to unstick from it?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's really been aware. It's like what I talked about earlier. You know, we keep adding conditions into a matrix of conditions, don't we? So the conditions of, you know, sign making may be starting to happen, and you have enough mindfulness to notice it, and rather than just consenting to it or pushing it away or getting lost in it, you have that enough mindfulness and metta to begin to befriend it. You know, you're already starting to add conditions into a matrix of conditions, which is changing that matrix. So it no longer has the fuel to be just uninterrupted. You know, you are actually interrupting that habit pattern of sign building. And I think you're already on a pathway there, you know, which continues to unfold. You know, perhaps other qualities are brought in. You know, perhaps you start to investigate a bit. Is this true? How am I feeling the kind of repetition of the past in the present? You know, but you add those qualities of investigation in. You know, so you're already on the way, is what I'm saying, you know. And there is a natural unfoldment, you know, as long as you stay with that, as to how that way of stepping out of the finiteness of that sign making is already starting to happen. Because you're not throwing logs on the fire anymore, are you? You're not just blindly sort of consenting to it, well, you know, that's how it is, you know. You're actually already on a way that is actually changing that matrix of conditions. Yeah. We do need to stop now. Again, very much thank you for your forbearance and your perseverance and your listening and your patience and your sore butts. And I hope you travel safely and land softly. Thank you.